This is Rank and File Radio on CFRC 101.9 FM, broadcasting from Carruthers Hall, Queen's University in Kingston, Ontario, and podcasting at rankandfile.ca. Rank and File Radio is a weekly program covering labor issues from national and international perspectives. We are your hosts, Doug Nesbitt
and Andrew Stevens. On this week's show, Doug and I discuss the strike by members of the Teamsters Canada Rail Conference at Canadian Pacific Railways.
But first, here's this week's labor news update.
As the federal Conservatives introduce radical new changes to employment insurance, making it more difficult for recipients to collect EI, the government also plans on cutting the public off from important employment data. Human Resource Minister Diane Finley announced that her department has stopped sending Statistics Canada key and current information about how much federal money is flowing to each of the provinces for EI claimants. In an article by Canadian Press, a spokesperson for StatsCan said that inconsistencies in the data provided by Human Resources first appeared over a year ago. NDP opposition member Peggy Nash said of the Conservatives that, quote, transparency has not been their strong suit. The number of people receiving regular employment insurance benefits was little changed in March of 2012, with over 500,000 Canadians receiving EI. The number of beneficiaries has been relatively stable since September 2011. On a provincial basis, the number of EI recipients increased in Nova Scotia, Saskatchewan, Ontario, and New Brunswick. In Alberta, the number of beneficiaries decreased by 2.9%.
After the 11-month lockout at U.S. Steel in Hamilton ended in October 2011, the company and the union are once again in conflict. 46 union workers were recently laid off and replaced by 50 contract workers, retirees of the steel mill, who are paid $40 an hour compared to the $33 an hour union rate. The firings and hirings come after a six-month agreement expired in which 250 workers were guaranteed work for 26 weeks. This agreement was part of the resolution to the lockout. The union, Steelworkers Local 1005, says the company has violated the new contract by approaching at least 100 retirees to do contract work. Long suspected of attempting to shut down the steel mill, Rolf Gerstenberger, president of the union, told the Hamilton Spectator, quote, "You get a real feeling of doubt about whether they're going to be around in the future. You have to start wondering if they have any long-term plans for this plant."
On Monday, May 28th, librarians, library assistants, clerks, and other staff in Regina walked off the job to protest the library board's refusal to resume contract talks. The walkout technically wasn't a wildcat strike because the union was in a legal strike position as of May 27th, but the action wasn't authorized by the union. The walkout preceded a union rally at City Hall. The 180 Regina library workers, represented by QP Local 1594, have been without a contract since December 2009. They've also been without any wage increases since that time. The workers delivered an 82% strike mandate on April 2nd. The Regina Library Board has refused to bargain with the union since negotiations broke down in April. The board is demanding longer hours on Sundays with less pay and reduced health and dental benefits for part-time hires.
300 heavy equipment operators on construction sites in Windsor, Essex County, and Kent County are on strike. The workers of Local 793 of the International Union of Operating Engineers operate heavy construction equipment on road, sewer, water, bridge, and excavation projects, including the Windsor-Essex Parkway. In addition to the parkway, the strike has shut down other construction sites across the region. The job action started after negotiations with the Heavy Construction Association of Windsor broke down on May 24th. The association wants to extend weekly work hours before overtime pay from 50 to 55 hours. The union says this would violate the Employment Standards Act and has filed charges of bad faith bargaining with the Ontario Labour Relations Board. The union is also asking the board to force the association to sign its final offer memorandum of agreement in order to bring a resolution to the dispute.
Protests against mining giant Rio Tinto continue in Alma, Quebec. On March 31st, 8,000 people demonstrated in solidarity with the 780 aluminum workers locked out by the company. The march was made up of union members and activists from across a dozen countries where Rio Tinto has installations. Company managers are demanding that the workers, represented by Steelworkers Local 9490, be replaced by subcontracted employees upon retirement. The replacement workers will be paid half the existing rates and will be without benefits or pensions. According to reports, the Alma facility is the most profitable aluminum smelter in Quebec. Between May 1st and 3rd, 20 locked-out workers walked over 200 kilometers to the Quebec National Assembly in a protest dubbed the Energy March. the marchers presented a petition signed by over 12,000 supporters that denounces the fact that the anti-union and anti-worker company is being supported by government subsidies and interest-free loans. The government of Quebec has also signed a contract with the company that obligates it to purchase hydroelectric power that Rio Tinto produces with its private dams. On April 16th, Union Federation launched the Off the Podium campaign, which aims to have the International Olympic Committee to exclude Rio Tinto from the list of official suppliers for the 2012 London Olympics. Supporters held a rally in front of IOC headquarters in Lucerne, Switzerland, on May 14th. The campaign has received support from labor federations from across the globe.
3 weeks into a strike at its Joliet, Illinois hydraulic parts factory, Caterpillar offered a new contract to the 780 workers represented by the Machinists Union. Neither the union nor the company would speak about the new offer. The previous offer was rejected on April 29th, leading to a strike on May 1st. Caterpillar wanted workers to pay more for their health benefits while fixing their wages to market wages as determined by a local annual survey. Since most jobs in the region are non-union, this scheme would likely mean a wage cut for the workers. The workers rejected this offer, delivering a 94% strike mandate despite a $5,000 signing bonus. Caterpillar has continued to post record profits, including an incredible 83% increase between 2010 and 2011. Its heavy machinery sales have been boosted by a booming resource extraction sector led by the Alberta tar sands. Despite this, Caterpillar closed down its profitable and government-subsidized London, Ontario locomotive plant in February, moving operations to a low-wage factory in Muncie, Indiana. In Joliet, Caterpillar is demanding concessions from the workers who are already operating on a two-tier wage contract. The necessity of coordinated bargaining between different unions in order to combat concessions is made all the more important in this case. The Joliet workers would not be having such a difficult time had the United Auto workers, representing nearly 10,000 Caterpillar workers, not accepted the market-based wage proposal in 2004.
On May 15th, the Ontario Labour Relations Board issued a bargaining certificate for part-time professors at St. Paul University, which is affiliated with the University of Ottawa. A strong majority of over 80% of part-time professors voted in favor of joining the Public Service Alliance of Canada in a vote held in April. The number of part-time professors working at the university varies throughout the year and was estimated at 45 at the end of the winter 2012 term. The successful organizing drive at St. Paul University marks the latest victory in PSAC's broader campaign aimed at organizing the university sector across the country. Approximately 30,000 of the PSAC's 186,000 members work in universities as support staff, part-time professors, researchers, and teaching assistants, amongst others.
Workers at a Remco warehouse in Brampton, Ontario, which supplies H&M clothing stores in Canada, supported certification with the United Food and Commercial Workers on May 23rd. This successful campaign comes after workers at H&M retail locations in Mississauga, Ontario, and Joliet, Quebec, joined the UFCW. The new Remco workers will join UFCW Local 175, the country's largest local union that already represents employees from H&M's Mississauga Square One location.
International technology giant Hewlett-Packard announced on May 23rd that the company would lay off 27,000 employees by the end of 2014. This number represents 8% of HP's total workforce. The move is part of a larger restructuring initiative that seeks to generate savings of $3 to $3.5 billion through a process of streamlining the company's supply chain, narrowing its product portfolio, and improving its business practices. HP says that the savings will be reinvested in the company's research and development projects. Currently, 3% of sales goes into R&D. Operating profits per employee at HP come in at around $35,000, below that of Apple and IBM, which currently stand at $49,000. Reports suggest that the company's innovation and productivity have lagged behind competitors like Apple. HP is offering an early retirement program for some of its employees, and workforce reduction plans will vary according to country. In the last decade, HP has shed over 75,000 workers.
Membership in registered pension plans in Canada has surpassed 6 million in 2010, up almost 1% from 2009. Membership in public sector pension plans rose 1.8%, while those in private sector pension plans declined by 0.5%. The biggest decline occurred in the manufacturing sector, where members fell by over 80,000 between 2009 and 2010. The public sector accounted for 52% of total membership in registered pension plans, up from 40% in the 1980s. the total pension coverage rate in 2010 stands at approximately 39%. Women accounted for 3/4 of the increase in pension plan membership. The participation of women in pension plans continues to outpace that of men. Most employees who are members of pension plans are covered by defined benefit plans, but this number is on the decline. A defined benefit plan is to be paid according to a formula stipulated in the plan text. The employer's contributions are not predetermined, but are a function of the cost of providing the promised pension. In 2010, total employer and employee contributions to pension plans reached a record level of $54.2 billion. The market value of assets in these plans exceeded $1 trillion in 2010, up 10.6% from the year before. According to Statistics Canada, employer pension plans have recovered all losses experienced during the recent economic downturn.
That's this week's Labour News Update. After these messages, Rank and File Radio discusses the issues at Canadian Pacific and what this means for workers and employee pensions. Stay tuned to CFRC 101.9 FM.
Are you interested in Indigenous events on and off campus, but you're tired of the same liberal narratives that dictate those stories?
This is Total Island, don't you ever forget. We got one planet, let's protect what's left. This is Total Island, don't you ever forget.
Then tune in to the Indian Surgency with DJ Redskin Girl, Thursdays from 5:30 to 6 on CFRC 101.9 FM, Kingston, Ontario. All my warriors, all of
my rebels, we need to sabotage these industrial devils. CFRC 101.9 in Kingston, Ontario hosts the National Campus and Community Radio Conference from June 12th to 17th. This year's NCRC features the first ever Equity in Radio Conference on Saturday, June 16th, as well as an array of stimulating workshops, provocative speakers, mind-blowing music performances, and the annual dinner gala and awards ceremony. This June 12th to 17th, join radio makers from across these lands to share ideas, confront challenges, and celebrate our collective airwaves. For more information, visit cfrc.ca and click on the NCRC 2012 tab or email cfrc@ams.queensu.ca.
All right, how you doing? You're listening to CFRC 101.9 FM in Kingston, a public service necessity.
Welcome back to Rank and File Radio. So what's happening at CP Rail? Well, despite her appeal to protecting the Canadian economy, Labour Minister Lisa Raitt remains silent on CP's decision to lay off 2,000 workers during the strike by members of the Teamsters Canada Rail Conference. Most of these workers are those who work in the rail yards, engineering, and mechanical areas. As business associations like the Western Wheatgrowers Association and the Canadian Chamber of Commerce clamor to have the federal government legislate striking workers back to work, or even go further by deeming rail service an essential service, none of the bodies address the economic catastrophe facing CP employees and the assault on their hard-fought pensions.
Lisa Raitt threatened back-to-work legislation less than a day after the CP rail strike started on Wednesday, May 23rd. 4,800 conductors, engineers, and traffic controllers took to the picket lines to defend against CP rail's attempt to extend working hours and cut their pension plan by 40%. Rank and File Radio spoke to striking CP workers at the picket line in Smiths Falls, Ontario, on May 24th. Here's what one veteran employee and union member had to say about the company and what's at stake.
What are your thoughts on the strike vote that came up?
I did, actually. Never voted for strike in 27 years, but it has to do with pensions and cap pensions. And it's not a, you know, I mean, the end of the day, I don't have time to make up the money that I put into a defined pension plan, which a lot of people don't understand. I'm restricted to invest other money. So they want to cap it, but they want to devalue your pension by 40%, which is, like, in my opinion, illegal and wrong, morally wrong. But yeah, we have certain things in our collective agreement. We only have to work 10 hours. They would like us to work 12 and basically work tired. come to work. We don't have a schedule. We work on a board where your name comes up to the top. They call the train. You get a two-hour call, and you go to work. You don't. We don't have any year-long schedule. We don't. So you're always tired, continually tired, always. And they want to take that. At least we have 10 hours. We only, in our collective agreement, it says we only have to work 10 hours. And we do that, and anybody that wants to work 12 can, but, I mean, it's a safety issue. It is.
Considering there is a safety issue, as I just mentioned, what does the company say in response when workers in the union say that there are serious issues here with fatigue and safety on the rails?
Well, they'll tell everybody that everything is cool and it's all well and done, or well and good safety-wise, but I mean, like I said, at the end of the day, that they would like you to work, take a train, work 12 hours and get on right off that train and go back. I mean, and with the least manpower they could possibly have here. And I mean, to get it, we don't get sick days. We don't get paid for them. Personal leave, we don't get any paid time that way. You have to, if you want to go away, you want to make arrangements to do stuff, you can't. You have to talk to somebody, and you just can't take time off. So in saying that to you, I mean, what do you want us to do? Work 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, 365 days a year? Basically, if they could, they would.
I've heard some other guys talking about how many of the CP workers, such as yourself and others, are shareholders in the company.
Absolutely.
At the recent CEO, what was his name?
Fred Green.
Fred Green. Yeah. He resigned before he was likely to get ousted by the shareholders.
Absolutely.
What are your thoughts on his performance as CEO and as a head of the company?
Well, I mean, his performance, well, that's for debate, but as far as the CEO and his, I guess basically he was six years in, I don't know. I mean, he obviously he must have thought he was worth his 20-some million dollars that he got when he resigned, plus he gets his pension. I don't know. I mean, here we are on strike because we're fighting for our pension, and this guy's leaving a company that's, everyone says, is undervalued, great company to work for, and he's getting his money, but we aren't. I mean, everybody just wants a fair shake. That's it. Seriously, there's issues with unions for sure. But at the same time, in the rank and file, most of the people that are here on strike probably don't want to be on strike. But you have to stick up for what's right. Absolutely. There's no, I can't say any more on that. In that sense. Yeah.
The media reports that one of the largest stakeholders is a hedge fund based in New York. What are your thoughts on a company like CP being controlled and majority owned by a financial institution? What do they know about workers?
They probably don't know anything about workers. They know more about the bottom line. But at the end of the day, when you have a publicly traded company, that's what you're exposed to from time to time. I mean, the largest shareholder in the Canadian National is Bill Gates. So, I mean, that's out of our control in that sense. I mean, probably controlling it. Management-wise, that's a different story in the sense of the everyday operation. We need people that are railroaders to run this place, but at the same time, that's out of my hands in that sense, too.
I know this is just your opinion, but can you give me some insights into what local managers, such as those who are here at the Smiths Falls rail line and the rail station, how do you think they feel about the company's decisions and the strike itself?
Well, I don't think I can't really speak for them, but I mean, as far as the management here, they are actually originally from the rank and file. Like that, they are engineers, conductors. They started doing what we do, so they understand our side of things too. I can't speak for them on the other side of it because they are in management, but they're in a precarious position. They have to do what they have to do, and we have to do what we have to do.
If you had 5 minutes to speak with the interim CEO, Tobias, about the strike and about what the company has been doing and its decision to really assault the pension, what would you say?
Well, I'd need more than 5 minutes, but I don't know. I just think, for me, the guys that have been here and the girls, women, the people that are in the rank and file today that are in the pension plan, their pension should be excluded. If they want to cap new hires that wouldn't know any different, and these are the rules and regulations of the job, they would have to say yes or no to it. But I mean, the people that are here that have had an existing pension, it shouldn't change, period. Other than that, I can't say any more on that.
Federal Labor Minister Lisa Raitt is now threatening back-to-work legislation. What's your response to that decision?
Well, the unfortunate part about that is there's a lot of people affected by the strike, and I mean we ship this railway is 40% of all the goods transported in Canada. It's transported by rail, over 80% between the two railways. So you can imagine how many millions of dollars of freight that are sitting there. Unfortunately, we probably will get back to work, ordered back to work, but I mean, at the same time, you do have to kind of feel for those people that need their goods moved and stuff like that. I mean, it's kind of a catch-22. I mean, you have to move the freight. It is, I mean, but that's not basically what this is about. Unfortunately, that gets in the way of collective bargaining, and if the company would have wanted to bargain in good faith, then we wouldn't be in this situation. It's as simple as that.
What makes this round of negotiations, the strike vote, and relationship between the union and the company different than in the years past?
I think the big difference is this pension issue. I think it's we've been on strike before, but the biggest issue this time, and I think we're more solid as a union than we ever were. It's the pension issue. That's a huge, huge thing. I mean, it's not what you want to do, but at the same time, you have to protect your interests. I mean, it's just the way it is.
In addition to the Conservative government's repeated contempt for fair and free collective bargaining, what also needs to be discussed here is the internal corporate battle taking place in CP Rail. On May 17th, only hours before a shareholders' meeting in Calgary, Canadian Pacific CEO and President Fred Green resigned. Another five directors, including CP Chairman John Cleghorn, announced they would not run for re-election to the company's board. Both the CEO and the directors anticipated being ousted by shareholders at the meeting. The resignations are attributed to the activist shareholder, William Ackman, who heads the Pershing Square Capital Management hedge fund based in New York. It was revealed in October that Pershing Square became CP's largest shareholder, spending $1.4 billion to secure a 14.1% share of the company.
Ackman's ability to sway CP shareholders was made clear when he managed to get the Canadian Pension Plan Investment Board and Ontario Teachers Pension Plan to endorse his call for a new direction in CP. Ackman-backed nominees now dominate CP's board of directors, and the company's interim CEO, Stephen Tobias, is also a director at Pershing Square. Ackman intends to appoint Hunter Harrison, the retired CEO of rival railroad Canadian National Railway, as the head of CP in the long term. All the more remarkable has been CP Rail's quadrupling of first-quarter profits in 2012, far exceeding analysts' expectations. These results were made public on April 20th, a month before the shareholders voted on the company's governance. Earnings per share were about 300% above its 2011 first quarter numbers. CP also reported that there were double-digit percentage improvements in train speeds, terminal dwell, active cars online, and car miles per day compared to the year before. These results were still considered lacking by CP's largest shareholders, notably the Canadian Pension Plan Investment Board, which stated, quote, "We believe that Pershing's proposals for change provide the greatest likelihood for long-term sustainable improvement."
For pension plans and hedge funds, the measure of financial performance is rated by shareholder returns and not profitability, productivity, or market share alone. Leading shareholders maintain that these targets can be achieved by lowering the railway's operating ratio, the percentage of revenues required to pay for operations. Under former CEO Fred Green, CP set a target to bring the ratio down from 80% to 70% for 2014, but Pershing insists that a goal of 65% by 2015 is achievable. Ultimately, this involves an assault on wages and pension liabilities. What these events suggest is that CP's governance and corporate strategy are being determined by the interests of finance capital, namely the hedge funds and pension funds that possess a dominant share in the company. The slate of directors nominated by Pershing represent an effort to accelerate financial returns on investment by slashing corporate operating costs rather than through a process of industrial expansion.
The case of CP also exposes the role of pension funds as central points of contention leading up to negotiations. This was certainly the case in the year-long strike by members of USW Locals 6500 and 6200 against international mining giant Vale in the nickel belt town of Sudbury, Ontario. With assets exceeding $1 trillion, there is a tremendous amount of wealth invested in Canada's registered pension plans. Considering that employers are responsible for contributing a dominant share to pension funds, 63%, corporations are attempting to lighten this responsibility at the bargaining table. Between 2009 and 2010, the freight carrier's pension contributions increased from $500 million to $625 million. After CP workers went on strike, the company said that it could no longer afford, quote, pricey pensions, and admitted to seeking to reduce what it called generous payouts to future retirees, as well as scaling back health and dental benefits for its pensioners. As the company's VP of Human Resources and Industrial Relations, Peter Edwards, stated in a memo, quote, whichever way the Teamsters prefer, we simply must address our legacy pension, increase our competitiveness, and minimize collateral damage to our customers' business. Either through a negotiated settlement or binding arbitration, the company argues that the union leadership must acknowledge what the company describes as a pension crisis by making concessions.
The Conservative government's wielding of back-to-work legislation as a mechanism through which to secure labor peace has undoubtedly empowered employers over workers during pension negotiations. Despite the appearance of a pension crisis at CP, it is clear that the company's leading shareholders and their newly elected board of directors want to enhance share value by reducing pension contribution, amongst other measures. As the company's performance indicates, it is not a question of profitability, but who benefits from the generation of corporate wealth. Mr. Edwards talks of supporting the future prosperity of CP is fundamentally the future prosperity of Pershing, shareholders, and financial capital.
With back-to-work legislation, the dispute will go to arbitration. What happens with pensions is up in the air. There seems to be no willingness to defy back-to-work legislation, as the workers see arbitration as a better solution than a lengthy strike against the company seeking such drastic pension reductions. However, a few of the workers Rank and File Radio spoke to were aware of the dispute between CUPW and the government over Rate's appointment of a former federal Tory candidate, Guy Dufour, as arbitrator between Canada Post and the Postal Workers Union, or the Rate-appointed arbitrators in position of a previously rejected agreement upon Air Canada flight attendants in November.
CP rail workers are well informed about the internal operations of the company, and many of them are stockholders themselves. With tremendous commitment to their work and a first-hand knowledge of how the Canadian economy functions in terms of how goods are transported and wealth distributed, one has to wonder if this group of 4,800 workers would be open to bold proposals about restructuring the Canadian economy along environmentally sustainable lines in which the railways provide the transportation backbone. Needless to say, the wider labor movement will look upon the strike and get much the same message as it did with Air Canada workers and the postal workers. The federal government is no friend of labor, but a strong ally of corporate power.
That's all the time we have this week. Join Rank and File Radio next Wednesday, 5:30 p.m. on CFRC 101.9 FM. A podcast of our program can be found at rankandfile.ca. Stay tuned.
We're gonna roll, we're gonna roll, we're gonna roll the union on. We're gonna roll, we're gonna roll, we're gonna roll the union on. If the boss gets in the way, we're gonna roll right over them. If the scabs get in the way, we're gonna roll right over them.